The 2024-25 Houston Rockets were generally expected to be a play-in team at best, and they have exceeded all expectations so far, currently second in the Western Conference. But they have many questions that remain unanswered. Who should get credit for the Rockets' success, and will they be able to keep it up for the rest of the season, let alone the playoffs? We discussed this very issue at our production meeting in preparation for today's show, and opinions were widely varied. Andrew suggested that Jalen Green should be strapped to one of the team's namesake Rockets and sent to space, while Brandon argued Green was a shooter, but according to Garrett, he is a, quote, shooter, not a maker. Rest assured, Brandon will defend Jalen Green with his life after accurately predicting a, quote, Jalen Green masterclass against the Cavs, a game in which Green went on to drop 26. And you can also rest assured that Garrett will be hating on Green in favor of his, quote, GOAT, Sigma, Tari Eason. Stay tuned to K-True 96.1 FM for what our executive producer Chloe called, quote, the crucifixion of Jalen Green, because we just got to roll the music and then we'll talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Stay in the loop. Go ahead and follow us at ktrue.sports on Instagram and at ktruesports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works. We don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for us, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktruesports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Throughout the next hour, you will be hearing from a team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges, here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the greater city of Houston. We're actually going to start off outside the hedges on our rivals campus at the University of Houston. Their nationally acclaimed men's basketball team has been on an absolute tear. 13-game win streak. They have not lost since November 30th. They have improved to 17-3, 9-0 in Big 12 play. That is good for first in the Big 12. Go figure. Lou Joe Lenardi at ESPN Bracketology has them as a 3-seed projection in the NCAA tournament. It's coming up in a couple months. Their 3 losses, I feel like they haven't quite gotten enough credit for this, were to Auburn by 5, to Alabama by 5 in overtime, and then to San Diego State also in overtime. So they have absolutely no bad losses. The resume is shaping up pretty well as they're going undefeated through one of the stronger power conferences thus far. The main motivation for giving them a shout out here was their game against Kansas on the road in Allen Fieldhouse. That game was on the evening of Saturday, January 25th, when our last episode aired. Absolute roller coaster of a game. I'm just going to give you a quick recap of what went down there. Kansas failed to inbound the ball up 2 with 16 seconds left. So they're up 66-64. Jawan Roberts for Houston got fouled almost immediately on Houston's inbound, made both free throws, tied the game at 66. In overtime, they were down 6, 79-73. The Cougars were down with 18 seconds left. They got a foul. They missed the first 1-1. They fouled Kansas. The Kansas player missed the first free throw. They got the rebound, hit a 3 with 8 seconds left from like 6 feet behind the arc, deflected the inbound pass that Kansas had after they made the shot. Then someone else from Malik Wilson, caught the inbound pass, hit another 3 with 2 seconds left to tie the game. Now it's in double overtime. They went on to win the game 92-86 in the second overtime. And also want to give out the best highlight from double overtime, in my opinion, was Emmanuel Sharpe stealing the ball from the guy he was guarding while sitting on his pockets on the ground. Like, he was just fully on his butt. Like, he had completely had his ankles broken. He just reached up and took the ball anyway. So shout out to him for that play. Best thing that happened in double overtime, in my opinion. Jawan Roberts also had 24 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. And Milos Uzon had 9 rebounds, 9 assists. Absolute great performance from Houston. They went on to beat West Virginia later in the week on Wednesday. Won that game 63-49. LJ Cryer had 17 there. So they have a lot of good options they can go to, which bodes well for their potential tournament run in March, which they will almost certainly get a shot at. In the next month, they play Texas Tech twice, Baylor at Arizona, and Iowa State. So their Big 12 gauntlet is far from over. If anything, they've had one of the easier Big 12 schedules so far, which is maybe the only cause that you could have for doubt so far from Houston. But they have shown that they can keep up with and beat very highly ranked Power Conference tournament teams. Their next game is tonight, the day of airing this, at 5 o'clock on ESPN2. They will be at home taking on Grant McCaslin's Texas Tech Red Raiders. They are ranked number 22. We will be predicting that game on our predictions segment later in the show. Let's bring it back inside the hedges to our Rice University campus and talk about Rice basketball. The Rice women won at Charlotte, last Saturday, 84-60. Dominant performance from the Owls. Dominique Ennis had 24 points and 8 boards. Victoria Flores had 14 points and 5 assists. They would also go on to beat Tulsa by 19 on Wednesday. Flores had 26 points and 8 rebounds in that game. Flores is averaging 15.2 points and 6.2 rebounds in her last six games after starting on the bench at the beginning of the season. Absolutely insane turnaround from her. Great stuff for the Owl women. They improved 12-9, 5-4 in the American Conference. Their next game is today at noon in Boca Raton, Florida against the FAU Owls. That game is on ESPN+. The Rice men have not been doing quite as hot. They are 11-10 on the season now, only 2-6 in the conference. Since we last talked to you, they lost to Tulane and on the road at South Florida. They're on a six-game skid and have not won since January 4th. However, don't lose all hope. Denver Anglin has dropped 27 and 17 in those two games respectively. And they have a great option to help recover their resume a little bit with their next game on Sunday at 2 o'clock, where they will be at home against the number 19 nationally ranked Memphis Tigers. That game is on ESPN+. If you want to watch the Owls attempt to keep their season going, we will have an in-depth segment breaking down what has been going on with the Rice men a little later in the show. Our women's tennis team has had an interesting week. They won 7-0 against the Incarnate Word Cardinals. However, that match started about 4 hours late because of a series of rain delays and was eventually moved to the Evelyn Rubinstein Jewish Community Center to be played indoors, I believe. So, fun fact there, they can move tennis matches around if there is a rain problem. We had some standout performances. Divna Ratkovic won 6-1, 6-1. Allison Zipley also won her singles match 6-0, 6-2. The Rice women's tennis team is 3-0 on the season, and their next game is versus Arizona on Friday, which is, that match is probably ongoing as we record this. When you're listening to this on the radio or on any of our streaming services, you can go ahead and look up how they did. Their next game after this airs will be at noon on Saturday, on the day that this show airs on February 1st. That game is home against TCU. The Houston Rockets have had an impressive stretch of games since we last talked to you. They have beat the Cavs, the Celtics, and the Hawks on the road and lost to the Grizzlies by 1 on Thursday night. They've had a nice handful of standout performances from a variety of players. Şengün and Green both had 26 against the Cavs. Dylan Brooks had 36 in Boston, and Jalen Green dropped 25 again in Atlanta. They're 32-14 on the year now and second in the Western Conference behind, I believe, only the Grizzlies, who they lost to by 1 last. No, people are shaking heads at me. Thunder. Oh my God, I forgot the Thunder existed. That's my bad. My apologies. We're going to kick it to some people who follow the NBA a little more closely to give you an in-depth breakdown of the Houston Rockets. So Garrett, Max, Brandon, and David, take it away.
Gentlemen, it is that time where we get into the topic of the day, the Houston Rockets. Ian teased it beautifully in another Great Around the Hedges segment. Shout out to him. Shout out to the research on finding out that the Rice women's tennis team played at the Jewish Community Center. That is unbelievable. but now we are talking about the Houston Rockets, and today we're doing something a little different here at Against the Grain. We are embracing a medieval theme for this segment. We are kicking it back to the Dark Ages, the Ages of the Knights, back when the Rockets actually were competing for titles. Wow. All right, Chloe's abusing the soundboard already. But the first thing I want to start off with before we get to Jalen Green and the big debate around him, I think it's time we knight Tari Eason and Amen Thompson. What do y'all say?
I'm not ready to knight Tari Eason, but we can definitely start going with Sir Amen Thompson.
Oh, yes. I think that's only respectable. Amen Thompson, the last few weeks of the season, has been unbelievable, and I think the national media and all the press coverage is finally catching up to what Houston fans know, what people have been watching the Rockets all season have seen. This guy is just, there's no other way to describe his defense. other than terrorism. If I was an offensive player going into the game and I knew Amon Thompson was going to be guarding me, I would be having nightmares. He's 6'7", 40-inch vertical, 7-foot wingspan, and his hands are unbelievable. The second someone is coming up the court, all right.
All right, pause.
The second someone crosses half court, the pressure is immediate. He is hounding people. He's getting steals, and he's the reason this Rockets team has been so great the past couple of weeks.
So, Garrett, do you think Amon Thompson is a good defender?
Yes.
All right. I think he's definitely shown to be very good recently, but I would like to see it continued and show that consistency, because we have seen, like, earlier in the season where he hasn't been as elite.
Okay, yes, but he has made his claim made. Like, who have the Rockets played these last couple games? They've played the Cavs and the Celtics. They've won both of those games. Those are some of the top offenses in the NBA. I believe they're both top four in offensive rating. And Amon Thompson has been able to handle both of those squads handily in being able to especially unite with Tari Eason to be able to make that dynamic duo in a very similar way, I think, to the past Bulls team with Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, and just how hounding that perimeter defense was. They are able to just disrupt offenses in a way that gets them so much pressure, and it converts into offensive game. These guys are incredible in the transition, and it all starts from Amon Thompson's point of attack defense.
Yeah, David, 100% right there. I'll give a couple stats to back that up. Right now, the Rockets are fourth in defensive rating, and when we just look at Tari and Amon on the court together, the Rockets have a plus 9.4 net rating. That would be good for the third best in the league. In general, the Rockets have a 5.8 net rating overall, so still pretty good. But you can see Tari and Amon are carrying a significant chunk of that. And David hit on a great point there that I wanted to get to. The transition offense for the Rockets has been unbelievable this year. We know they've struggled a lot in the half court to get things going. Whenever the game slows down, that's when the Rockets start to struggle a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at early games, they can just get out to 10, 20-point leads by just pouncing on other teams, getting easy steals and easy transition buckets for Amon and Tari.
But I think part of what you just said is sort of my problem. When we get to the playoffs, the game does slow down a bit, mm-hmm. and those guys they struggle a bit in the half-court offense. And in terms of shooting, like, Tari Eason's like just above a 30% three-point shooter. Can you really afford to have Amon and Tari Eason on the court in a slower style of play?
I think that's fair to say. Like, obviously, up until this point, like, the game does change a lot compared to the playoffs. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust and how they're able to handle that.
Yeah, well, I think you make a fair claim, Max, of we know Amon for sure is not like the positive offensive player we want him to be yet. His shot is still a long way from being there. I think he's shooting, 24-25% from three on the year. So, but Amon has like shown a little bit of development. I mean, we saw it in the Celtics game a couple nights ago. His finisher, he felt like Kobe afterwards, and for good reason. He was hooping.
I mean, definitely, we're definitely seeing improvements. And I will say, when we do get to the playoffs, they do have a really good coach who I believe can put them in good positions to succeed. He's shown that with the Celtics before.
Let's just refer to him as his title is Lord Ime Udoka. Is that what we're calling him?
Yeah, we can go with that.
Yeah, Ime is a great coach, and I think a huge asset for the Rockets going into the playoffs. But, I mean, just on this half-court offense point again, like, I don't think you should be asking Tari and Amon to be half-court creators or reasons to drive your half-court offense. That's the responsibility of guys like Jalen Green.
Of course, that's where Jalen Green.
And Şengün. And so I think Amon is, like, probably a slight negative offensively still right now. Tari, he's had a down three-point shooting year. I still believe he's a positive offensively. And he's the perfect archetype of someone who's a great playoff role player, of someone who can lock down one of the opposing team's best players and then also still hit clutch threes for you. Yeah, his percentage is not great, but he's not a guy like Josh Giddey, where the Mavericks last year in the playoffs didn't even guard him. Mm-hmm. And they were like, any given possession, we're fine with Josh Giddey taking an open three, because that's way better than the alternative of a Shea lightly contested midi. with Tari Eason, he is a reliable enough three-point shooter where they will be out on him in the playoffs, and it's going to open other things up. But I think it's time now we get to the elephant in the room, maybe the bum in the room, Jalen Green. Brandon, I know you're a bit of a Jalen Green lover. Why don't you make the case for Jalen Green right now before David and I, the true basketball intellectuals, tear your weak straw building of a case down?
Well, like you mentioned before, like a lot of the offense is running through Jalen Green right now. Mm-hmm. And with that said, like, he leads the team in points, mm-hmm. and he is the main driver behind the offensive unit of the Rockets. So I feel like come after him and criticize him when the Rockets have been so good this year, I think is not really a fair thing to do. He's still averaging over 20 points a game. And in the last four games, he's had over 25 three times. Like, he's playing pretty good ball.
Let's talk about those last four. Let's talk about those last five.
Get him.
I know, like, he is the offensive creator, but, like, if you just look at these last five games, he's 2-for-6, 2-for-6, 5-for-11, 1-for-6, 1-for-9, and then 5-for-10. That's incredibly inconsistent.
And that, like, that is from three. Also, another note there, David. I'll jump in. Sorry to cut you off. He hasn't shot over 45% from the field in his last six games.
Yeah, it's just, you can't expect him to be able to handle a lot of the offense. And also, oftentimes, the creation comes from Şengün. Like, that's a big thing that Udoka wanted to focus on, being able to put Şengün as a creator, almost as, like, a mini Jokic. And so, like, I think a lot of the success comes from Şengün and Amen Thompson and Tari Eason being able to create those opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, let's just get into it. You said, sure, he's scoring 20 points a game, and he is a driving force to the offense, air quotes there, because I think Şengün is the best offensive player on this team. The Rockets are 25th in half-court offense. They are not a great offensive team. The reason they're winning games and the reason they're second in the West right now is because their defense is so stifling because of Tari Eason and Amen Thompson. Mm-hmm. And they get out in transition and get easy buckets. But in the half court, they're incapable. And that's where Jalen Green should be the guy who's carrying this team.
So if you look at the past month, Jalen Green is shooting 47% from the field, 43% from three, and averaging 26 points per game. What is there to complain about?
That's awesome.
Over an entire month, instead of just looking at the last five games, in which he still scored 25 points three different times.
Okay, well, that's cool. He scored 25 when he was taking 20 shots a game and on really poor efficiency. Yeah, Jalen Green had a great month of December and early January. The issue is, this is what Jalen Green does every year. He has a good couple of weeks where he shows what the potential is, what Jalen Green could be, of when his shot is going in. He is an amazing offensive player, okay? But when his shot is not going in, he is a complete negative on the basketball court. He doesn't get to the rim as much as he should for someone who's so athletic. He doesn't get to the line anywhere near as much as he should. So when he's having an off shooting night, he can still get points and still help out the team offensively. When Jalen Green is not hitting shots, the Rockets are screwed offensively because of that. He cannot do anything when his shot is not hitting. And so, yeah, every player has a month and a half where they're really hot. And that's what we saw from Jalen Green. But he has, in 4 years, he hasn't been able to put together something for longer than a 6 week stretch. I mean, when are we going to see it? This is year four.
He's putting it together right now as we speak.
He put it together, and then he had six straight games where he couldn't put the ball in the hoop.
The last five games, he shot 46% against the Celtics, 44% against the Cavs. Against the Cavs, he put up 26 on 16 shots.
In the first game against the Cavs, he shot 25% from the field and was a minus 17 in his minutes, and they still won.
And then the next game, he responded by going for 26 points on 44% from the field.
Are we bragging
threes.
About 44% from
and
the
hitting
field?
Five threes and going 45%
God.
From three.
What is the expectation? Okay, like, that's fine, but I'm just saying, what we want Jalen Green to be and what Houston fans should want out of Jalen Green is a number one offensive option and a player who can lead you in the playoffs and actually lead a good offense. I think it's just time to accept.
26 points per game isn't enough for a lead scorer on a team.
That's cool. He had a good game. Congratulations, Jalen Green. Give him his MVP award. Yeah, give him Give him an all-star. That's awesome. He had 26 points. PJ Washington had 29 points.
26
the other
points per game this month. Like, he's been doing it consistently all month. And
okay. You just said he's been doing it consistently all month. It's a 47 game. I mean, if he's been this consistent player that you're saying he's been, why are the Rockets 9 points better when he's off the court? Like, they are a significantly better team when he's not playing.
It's a much smaller sample size.
It's
look at the minutes.
We're 47 games into the year.
He averages 33 minutes a game.
Yeah, and so in
so
the 15 minutes
small,
he's not playing,
so
they're doing
very
awesome.
Small, you're looking at a very small, like, section of the game.
It's a small section if we were looking at this on one game. Single game plus minus doesn't, like, capture this effectively. But 47 games into the season, this is, like, a 700-minute sample size.
Yeah.
This is easily statistically significant. The Rockets are worse with Jalen Green on the court. I mean, I don't know what to say. Listen, I have nothing against Jalen Green personally or off the court. I think he is a good NBA player, but I don't think Jalen Green is ever going to be a great NBA player or someone who can be the first or even second option on a team that's contending for a title. There's just no path in my mind where he gets to that unless he actually starts getting to the rim more and starts getting to the line and also becomes less of a negative defensively.
I mean, if we look at who they could potentially play in the playoffs, you're looking at a play-in team in the first round right now.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially the Timberwolves, the Kings. He's struggled against the Timberwolves, but he's played pretty well against the Kings this year.
Okay, Max, if they were playing the Timberwolves right now in a seven-game series, who would you pick to win that?
I would pick the Rockets.
How?
The Timberwolves are not
thoughts
playing,
from around the room on that,
the
actually?
Timberwolves are not playing good team basketball right
Brandon
now.
Brandon has a look on his face that he doesn't want to say.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that.
Rockets fan, Brandon, by the way.
I think the Timberwolves would probably.
David?
Anthony Edwards is the best player in that series, and he wins that, like, handily, I think. So and let's talk about the other play-in team that you forgot to mention, but the Mavericks right now, who are the eighth seed.
Yeah.
And I think the Mavericks just spank the Rockets.
I don't think that's a fair comparison to the Rockets due to the amount of time Luka's missed. If Luka's fully healthy, the Mavs are probably the second or third seed in the West. So I don't think that's a fair comparison for the Rockets. Because obviously, they get slapped by my Dallas Mavericks with a fully healthy Luka. But I'm also on the train of if you see the Timberwolves in a seven-game series, you're going to be a first-round exit.
I just like if you look at the way the Rockets play together, like as a team, it's mm-hmm. just so much better than what the Timberwolves do. Julius Randle is even more
Julius
of an
Randle
offensive liability
awful.
Than what you made Jalen Green to be
yeah.
out.
All right, I'll give you that. Julius Randle is
and
a certified bum.
Rudy Gobert is a proven liability in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. But
so you have two liabilities on the Timberwolves.
Okay, well, offensively, if you look at the Rockets, who are we going to rely on to score in the playoffs?
Jalen Green and Sengun.
All right, we just spent the whole episode talking about Jalen Green not being a reliable offensive option, so you weren't listening. I can give you Sengun. Shout out to Alperen Sengun, by the way. He was just named an All-Star. He's been solid this year. Still not like fully where you. Yeah. Thank you, producer Chloe. Still not fully where you'd want to be offensively, but his defense has gotten better. I think he's taken a little bit of a mini leap this year. Solid year for Sengun. But in a playoff series, I mean.
And then I'll give you one more name.
Okay.
Dylan Brooks is one of the players on the Rockets with some playoff experience.
Yeah.
And he's proven over the past couple games that he can give you some like game-winning performances on the defensive and offensive end.
I think you can count on Dylan Brooks to be decent in the playoffs, even though when they played the Lakers a few years ago, he was a massive negative back when Dylan Brooks was on the Grizzlies. But I guess we'll ignore that. Yeah. That
I mean,
data
just,
point.
Just don't call out LeBron like that.
Yeah,
you know?
He was just too
okay.
much of an instigator.
He pokes bears, folks. That's what he does. All right. Let's move on. We've completely lost the medieval theme. We've lost the plot entirely. Let's see if we can get some quick playoff predictions in for the Rockets. Where do you see them going in the playoffs? I don't think the Timberwolves are going to finish this poorly. I think they're going to figure it out at least a little bit and figure out how to make Julius Randle not a complete negative. So where do you guys see the Rockets going in the playoffs? I'll start with you, Brandon.
I'm not sure. I think it honestly just like depends on how the matchups like end up falling. Because I could see them being an early exit, but I could also see them going like pretty deep.
What do you think the ceiling is of this team?
Honestly, I'm not even sure.
I can give you an answer.
I feel like so much of it, though, is like how much their defense is going to transition to the playoffs.
Uh-huh.
So, like, if they come and they're able to lock down, like, everyone, like, they're going to go. They could go far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Max, David, any thoughts on that?
Once again, like Brandon said, I think it does depend on the matchups. But I will say, if they don't see Denver or OKC till the Western Conference Finals, I would take the Rockets to go to the Western Conference Finals.
Okay. David?
I don't know about that. Some of these play-in teams are very lethal, and I think there's a very real possibility they could get knocked out in the first round, just depending on how these matchups play out. I would put them, I think if they do get past the first round, it is a lot more likely that they end up to the finals, or to the Western Conference Finals. Sorry, this is not a championship team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, David. I don't see any world in which the Rockets make it out of the West. I think there's no chance of that happening this year, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, this is still a young Rockets team. That's not the expectation yet. They're not in full win now mode. And the Thunder are just unbelievable. I think that's the clear favorite in the West. But then you look at the teams behind the Thunder, and I'd say Nuggets, Mavericks, Grizzlies, Timberwolves, I would take all those teams over the Rockets in a 7-game series. I think those teams all have more playoff experience. I think they would have, each one of those teams would have the best player in the series compared to the Rockets. Grizzlies might be a little bit of a debate, and I think that would be the closest series. But I just don't see any way the Rockets would get past Nuggets, Mavs, Thunder in a playoff series. So I think the Rockets, if the matchups shake out well, if you see someone like the Clippers in the first round, that's awesome. And I think you book your ticket to the Western Conference semifinals, and then you bid adieu.
Honestly, I kind of agree with that. I think it's really hard to win in the playoffs when you don't have a clear cut, like, number one guy. And the Rockets right now really don't.
They have Jalen Green averaging 26 points
right.
per game.
All right, we're done. Even
with Jalen Green, though, like...
Thank you.
I could support Jalen Green, but, like, at the same time, is he really, like, in the upper echelon of number one players? No. So, like, I think... Like, historically, like, you look back, like, when's the last time a team that really didn't have a clear-cut number one guy went really far in the playoffs?
Yeah. No, you're,
last
you're,
year. The Indiana Pacers. I would not say Tyrese Halliburton.
I disagree.
He's far and away
is
better
much
than,
more
Jalen
of a
Green.
Than Jalen Green.
I don't think that's a fair argument to make. Also, they had a really Mickey Mouse road to get to the conference finals, to be fair, playing a Bucks team that didn't have Dame or Giannis in the first round. It's just an unbelievably lucky matchup. And so maybe the Rockets could get some of that luck this year. But, I mean, we see time and time again in the playoffs, teams that tend to fall from where they were in the regular season are teams that rely a lot on transition, teams that play really hard defense but don't have much offense. And that's kind of where the Rockets are at right now. So I'm not a Rockets hater. I think it's great what they're doing this year. I'm really excited to see where they go in the future. But I don't think Rockets fans should get their hopes up too much and think this is the year you make a run, because that's just not in the cards. All right. With that being said, I think we're probably long overdue for a transition here. It's time to talk a little bit about the coaching carousel in the... Oh, never mind. It's time for producer Chloe.
What a great transition from Garrett. Before we get into our exciting new segment... we have a PAA and promo to read. Yeah, who's hype about that?
Ooh.
1 in 10 Americans have hearing loss. But today, most of those experiencing hearing loss can be helped thanks to advances in hearing aid technology and medical treatments. If you or someone you know has hearing loss, please schedule a hearing test, the first step on the road to better hearing. For more information on hearing problems, tests, and treatments, call the Hearing Helpline at 1-800-EAR-WELL or visit hearingloss.org. And now for our promotion. The Cafe shines a spotlight on some of the most underrated producers and beatmakers of our time. Spanning genres from hip-hop to indie, from funk to electronic, The Cafe brings you some of the best soundscapes, grooves, and sample chops, all for your listening enjoyment. Come find out what you're looking for at the cafe, Fridays from 3 to 4 p.m., live on KTRU Rice Radio. Let's transition now into our very special new segment, the Rice Cooker Coaching Carousel. Garrett, what do you got here?
Well, this is a little two-parter here. First, we're going to talk about the coaching carousel and go over some of the moves, but then I'll be leading off this new segment that will probably air every couple of weeks going forward called the Rice Cooker. When something gets one of us really hot, really steamed, you could say, we are going to run an episode of the Rice Cooker in which one of us just gets a couple of minutes to go off, say what's on our mind, and not pull any punches. Today, I'll be talking about Jerry Jones, the Cowboys, and Brian Schottenheimer. As you can imagine, things might get a little heated. The bleep button might have to be used a couple times, but we're going to have a good time. However, before that, it's time to talk a little bit about the NFL coaching carousel. Brando, I'll kick it over to you. Let's start off with your New York Football Jets.
So the Jets recently hired Aaron Glenn, is the former Lions defensive coordinator. He was there from 2021 to 2025, and over the time, the Lions obviously have grown an immense amount, going from basically a rebuild to constantly competing team. Originally, he was drafted by the Jets in 1994, so a real full circle moment as he started his NFL career playing for the Jets, and also his front office career as he started as a scout in 2012 for the Jets. But honestly, with this hire, like, kind of like meh. I think it's a pretty interesting hire considering we just had Robert Saleh. And in terms of what they both bring as a head coach, it's like extremely similar. Like their resumes before they were hired as the Jets head coach, very similar. The energy that they bring and the type of coaches that they are honestly very similar as well. They're very high energy coaches. Like they bring a big presence. And they can win over a locker room, but I'm a little confused as to why we would go from Robert Saleh to Aaron Glenn. Like,
I'm with you there on that, Brandon. I think this is very much a lateral move.
I agree.
I'm a big fan of Aaron Glenn. I liked Robert Saleh too, but it seems like you replaced Robert Saleh with a guy who's exactly like him in Aaron Glenn, a great defensive-minded head coach who's going to look to build a solid culture. But if you wanted to do that, why did you get rid of Saleh in the first place? Let's go rapid fire on these next few. Raiders hire Pete Carroll. Ian, any thoughts on that?
I love this hire.
Okay.
Like, I think I'm a little higher on this than some people are. I think people have a lot of doubts about Pete Carroll's age. I think I have fallen for all the social media clips of him like yapping with players and spinning the rock and just living it up. I think he's got, I don't know if he's got, you know, 15 years left still in him, but like I think you give him young pieces, he's got the energy to kind of match and lead that. And I think those are going to be guys who grew up watching him, and they're really going to respect that about him. Because, like, they're not, this is crazy to say, but, like, the people he's working with aren't that much older than we are, and we all, like, grew up watching the Pete Carroll Seahawks, and, like, that's like one of the biggest things I remember watching NFL as a kid. So I think just, like, the way he's going to be able to build a culture and bring a little, maybe a spark to kind of the bizarre collection of young talent that's hopefully for the Raiders going to end up in their organization is exactly what Vegas needs.
Go ahead, Brent.
I totally agree with that. Like, this was, we were talking in our pre-meeting about this, and some people had doubts about his age, but I actually really like this hire. I think there's something to be said about the fact that, like, he's won on every single level that he's ever coached his entire career. Like, that is just not something that a lot of these coaching hires that we've seen in recent years have. And yes, he's older. I want to say he's 72. But I still think he has 4 or 5 years left at the minimum. Like you look at like photos of him. Like we were talking and joking about the photo with him and DK Metcalf from a few years back. After he got drafted and he took his shirt off, like he's in very good shape for his age. So I think he brings a lot of potential to the Raiders. And honestly, for me, I thought it was like an A-minus type of hire just because of his age, but otherwise it would be an A-plus, like out of the park home run.
Yeah. All right, let's rapid fire these next few quick 20-second takes. Bears hire Ben Johnson. Ian, first thing that comes to mind.
I like the culture that he built at the Lions. I see potential there with a young quarterback. I don't know a ton about Ben Johnson, I'll be so real. But
I think it's a great hire. I think he's honestly who I wanted the Jets to hire. I'm gonna be so for real, but I think he's a really good hire, really good at building offenses, and like you saw what he did with the Lions, he fully turned them around.
All right, Brandon, thoughts on Patriots getting Mike Vrabel, the prince who was promised?
I think this is actually a great hire, too. Yeah. As much as I hate the Patriots and want them to lose every game for the rest of the time.
That's
I think
so real.
This is another coach that, like, if the Jets hired, I would have been really happy with. He has previous experience with the Titans. Obviously, that stint was up and down, but I feel like he really was kind of a scapegoat with the Titans. Like, he was a good coach for most of the time he was there. And like the fact that he was a former Patriots linebacker and he's replacing someone like Jerod Mayo, I think it's a really good hire.
Yeah. All right. Last one before we get into the Cowboys. Ian, thoughts on the Jags, Liam Cohen, and the whole drama that went down there?
Okay. So I actually have, this is a little bit of my rice cooker, my hot take. I have a whole little spiel on this. I want to fill in the viewers on like what actually happened, because I thought I knew what happened, and then I read like multiple articles beginning to end about it, and it is absolutely insane. So if you don't know, Liam Cohen was the Buccaneers offensive coordinator in this past season that's just wrapping up now. It was his first year with the Buccaneers. He did an absolutely outstanding job statistically. Baker Mayfield career best 41 touchdown passes, they had the third best offensive points per game season in franchise history, behind only the two Tom Brady seasons, including the 2020 Super Bowl team. They went from dead last in the league in rushing yards at 88 in 2023 to 149, which was fourth most in the league in 2024. So absolutely insane turnaround on every aspect of the offense with the Bucs under Liam Cohen. He interviewed with the Jaguars on January 15th to be their head coach after they parted ways with Doug Peterson, who we have discussed already somehow. The Bucs were informed and supportive of this interview, and reportedly he was asked by the Bucs what his number was to stay there, and he said $4 to $5 million a year. The Jags owner was really impressed with his interview after he did that virtual interview and wanted to interview him in person. But before he went to that interview, the Bucs agreed to match his $4 to $5 million number that he gave them and make him the highest paid coordinator in the history of the NFL, contingent on him foregoing his second Jaguars interview. So he allegedly withdrew from consideration for the Jaguars job. Later on that exact same day, Jaguars parted ways with general manager Trent Baalke, and then their owner reached directly back out to him, to Liam Cohen, after Cohen had already said that he didn't want the Jaguars job anymore. So then the next day, he was scheduled to go into the Bucs facility to sign his new, like, $4.5 million contract or whatever. It was somewhere between $4 and $5 million. That number wasn't publicly available. But allegedly, at least $4 million a year contract was on the table with a pen waiting for him at 11 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday, January 23rd. And there were people waiting, like, for him. Like, this was scheduled to happen. And instead of going in, he went to Jacksonville for an in-person interview. And
what?
I'm dead serious. This is what happened. Like, multiple sources. By midnight, he had agreed to be the head coach, and at 5:50 p.m. before he signed the Jags contract, he called the Bucs to tell them that he was reconsidering Jacksonville, although allegedly, like, some source in the Jags front office had already leaked this to Tampa after he had been, like, MIA for 6 hours. A team source with the Bucs said that even if Cohen had signed his contract, they technically couldn't have prevented him from going to do the second interview in Jacksonville, which is interesting because it kind of makes it sound like it was just like a handshake agreement, which makes the whole thing in a really like ethical gray area, because he had no like actual contractual obligation, like, especially since he didn't sign the thing, though it is a little shady. And I also thought it was fun that Cohen has a suspicious history of sudden last minute coaching role changes. In December 2017, he agreed to be the offensive coordinator at Holy Cross. And then later in that month, he dipped to be a wide receivers coach for the Rams. And then on January 23rd, 2024, he had told all of the Kentucky players that he was staying there as their offensive coordinator. And I believe their quarterback came out and said that on like a local radio show. That's how that got out. And then 2 weeks later on February 3rd, he agreed to be the Bucs OC. So, you know,
unreal sequence of events.
Yeah. Oh my
God. This
it's
is
so
like
funny.
Not, this is definitely the most outrageous one in my opinion, in terms of like what in the actual frick is going on here. But like it's, I don't know. If you're going to hire Liam Cohen, be warned. His exit may come with a little bit of media attention. I will also say, I think my overall thoughts on this, if we're doing this like hot take style, is like, it's really funny. Okay, for one, like as a sports fan, this is like so entertaining. Yeah. I loved researching this. And also, like, what are we doing? Like, how are we letting this slide? Like, how is this? Like, I think if you're Cohen, there's a point where you just got to lock in. I think if someone agrees to pay you $4 million and you agree like, even if it's just a handshake agreement to take their $4 million to do a job that you've been proven to be really good at. Like,
I think it's a great situation, too.
No, and then also, I think, like, real quick, I think it's really funny because, like, during all of this time, like, had he not been offered the Jags role, like, this was his boss that he was just, like, kind of just ignoring.
Yeah.
So I saw something on that where it was like, oh, it would be like if your boss was, like, trying to call you and you just were ignoring him, like, the entire day. Like, you were supposed to show up to a meeting and then just fully ignore
him. That's true. He hadn't fully had the offer in hand yet when he was. That's true. I didn't even think about that. But I think you're 100% right. He was, like, an employee of the Buccaneers.
No,
and they were planning on having him
so
for another
funny.
Year. And then he was just, like, went off the grid, basically, except he was in Jacksonville. So, interesting stuff from the state of Florida. I think it's a little shady. I'm not thrilled with Leon Cohen's ethics on this one.
I was going to say, if this was a player, this would reek of tampering in some way. But I know for executives and coaches, the rules are a little bit different. So.
Is this kind of shades, though, of Bill Belichick? Like,
oh, this is absolutely something that would have happened. For sure. I mean, how he got to the
Patriots
after leaving the Jets.
Exactly.
That was a little bit different. That was arguably worse, actually.
No,
having a head coaching position at the Jets and saying, you know what?
Yeah.
I would rather not.
I actually agree that it's worse because he fully, like, accepted that and then just left.
Yeah. Wild times.
All right. That's about all I have on that. Thank you for letting me recap that for the viewers. I was just so entertained by that this week. I was following the NFL.
All right, well, now that brings us to our main event. Garrett, any thoughts on the Dallas hiring?
There's been a lot of talk in the media about Brian Schottenheimer, about the Cowboys, and to be frank with you, it doesn't matter. I know Brian Schottenheimer was the offensive coordinator of the coach who we just let go, an offensive coordinator who wasn't even calling the plays and wasn't in serious consideration for a single other head coaching job in the NFL. So you may ask, why did the Cowboys hire this bozo? And I'll let you know why. Jerry Jones. The sole problem, the root of all our struggles in Dallas football for the past 30 years, Jerry Jones, the only owner who is the GM of his own team. And to give you an idea about the rise and fall of the Cowboys and why Jerry Jones is the root of all problems, I want to kick it back the year of our Lord, 1989, when Jerry Jones bought the team and made his first and last good decision as Cowboys owner, bringing in Jimmy Johnson as head coach and general manager. So a little bit of context, Jerry Jones and Jimmy played together at Arkansas back in the 60s. They won a national championship before integration, so really great title win there. Jimmy, this was also coming off, Jimmy won a national title with Miami in 1987, and so the first thing Jerry Jones, when he takes over the team, is fire our legendary coach, Tom Landry, and get rid of Tex Graham as GM. He briefly installed himself as GM before hiring Jimmy and essentially giving him all control over players and everything. According to Jimmy Johnson, every single player in that era, and every single local reporter, Jimmy Johnson was the sole decision maker in free agency, drafts, and any other GM duties. On the other hand, of course, Jerry Jones argues that he had some say in building the best dynasty of the 90s. One of the most notable things, and what was the reason the Cowboys got so many picks and took over, was the Herschel Walker trade. So I know a lot of people from my generation do not remember this. I, of course, was not alive either, but doing a little bit of research, the Cowboys at this time traded Herschel Walker, who was arguably the best running back in the NFL, probably a top five player in the league, in exchange for 3 first-round picks, 3 second-round picks, and a few other late-round picks. When Jimmy Johnson made this move, he was mocked tirelessly by the local media, saying that the Cowboys got absolutely robbed, and this was going to be the start of the decline of one of the most historic franchises in the NFL. Jimmy Johnson, in his first press conference, said, "I pulled off a train robbery," and he was absolutely right. Jerry Jones opposed this move vehemently, and yet Jimmy still pushed it through, and this is why the Cowboys turned things around. Using these picks, we acquired Emmitt Smith, Hall of Fame running back, Russell Maryland, Ring of Honor member, and Darren Woodson, another Hall of Famer. Jimmy Johnson was also responsible for drafting Troy Aikman, Tony Tolbert, and a number of other great players. In his 5 years of general manager and coaching, Jimmy Johnson took 15 Pro Bowlers. 15 Pro Bowlers in 5 years in the draft. Unbelievable. We started off 1-15 in Jimmy's first year, going 7-9 in the second year, and starting to turn things around quite a bit. And when these things were getting turned around, when the Cowboys were starting to look like they could be an up-and-coming team, Jerry couldn't handle that. Jimmy Johnson was getting all the attention as one of the best coaches and general managers in the league. Troy Aikman was being hailed as one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. And Emmitt Smith was getting his flowers for being one of the best young running backs in the league. And what did Jerry do? He wanted the attention to himself, so he started being one of the first owners to host his own press conferences. Not only that, he would offer free steaks to any reporters that came out just to boost attendance, so Jerry could get a little more media attention for himself. During this time, Jerry even offered Jimmy Johnson multiple pay raises to try to negotiate the legendary coach's contract in order to give himself more control in football decisions. Jimmy decided to forgo any pay raises because he knew he needed to be in control of football. And that's when the Cowboys won back-to-back Super Bowls in 92 and 93. This was one of the most dominant teams in NFL history, with a roster chock full of Hall of Famers, Pro Bowlers, and future Ring of Honor members. And what does Jerry do? He can't take the lack of attention. He can't take the lack of stroking on his ego. So when Jerry sees Jimmy Johnson at a dinner party in that offseason, 100% true story, by the way, he went up to Jimmy and a group of former Cowboys coaches and tried to toast to their back-to-back Super Bowl titles. And Jimmy, talking with people that Jerry had recently fired, snubbed him a little bit. He said he gave him a little nod and kind of shooed Jerry away to continue on with his conversation. Jerry could not take that and could not take the fact that Jimmy Johnson was a better man than he was. Later that night, after having a few drinks, Jerry Jones, upset with the situation, told a Dallas Morning News reporter that there were 500 coaches who could win the Super Bowl with our team. And what does he do? He lets go of the coach and general manager who's coming off of back-to-back Super Bowl titles. This is something that has never happened since and will probably never happen again, of letting go of the coach who is clearly the best coach in the NFL and clearly the best general manager in football. And off back-to-back Super Bowls, he says, "You're done, and I am installing myself as general manager." So the Cowboys hire Barry Switzer, losing the NFC Championship in 1994. And then, of course, we win a Super Bowl in 1995, the last time the Cowboys ever made the NFC Championship, the last time we made the Super Bowl, and the last time we won the Super Bowl. Who was the core of that team? It was every single player built by Jimmy Johnson. It was Troy Aikman. It was Emmitt Smith. It was Michael Irvin, who came from the Tom Landry regime. And it was Russell Maryland, Darren Woodson, an unbelievable roster. Jerry Jones, in his first 8 years as general manager, after getting rid of Jimmy Johnson, selects only 4 future Pro Bowlers. He's hitting on half a Pro Bowler a year in these drafts, compared to Jimmy Johnson, who hit on an average of 3 per draft. We have Barry Switzer for 4 years before Jerry once again gets tired of this. Barry Switzer never gets another head coaching job. What do we do after getting rid of Barry Switzer? Bring in Chan Gailey. Loses in the wild card in back-to-back years, and after 2 years, he's gone too. What do we do after Chan Gailey? Bring in Dave Campo, someone who never made the playoffs and was only coached for another 3 years. He never even received a coordinator job after working with the Cowboys. What happens next? We bring in Bill Parcells, who suffers 2 wild card losses and is only coached for 4 years. Never had another head coaching job again. Then Wade Phillips, who wins a singular wild card game for the Cowboys in 3.5 seasons and never receives another full-time head coaching job again. Then the era young Cowboys fans are most familiar with, the Jason Garrett era, in which in 10 seasons, the Cowboys only make the wild card, only win the wild card game twice. That is the extent of our playoff success. Jason Garrett never gets another head coaching job. And now that brings us to Mike McCarthy, who in 5 seasons as the Cowboys head coach only has 1 wild card win. And while he's likely to get a head coaching job again, he's one of the very few coaches hired by Jerry Jones who has ever received any consideration for such a position after leaving the Cowboys. Our more keen listeners may have noticed a trend in all that data. It seems as though the Cowboys change head coaches very frequently, as they're now going on their 8th coach in the last 31 years. Whoever's hiring these coaches must not be doing a great job. You'll also notice a disturbing lack of playoff success. It's been 29 years since the Cowboys made their last conference championship appearance. If we had just assumed all things were equal every year, and every team had a 1-in-8 chance to make it, there's only a 2.1% chance of missing it for that many consecutive seasons. In the last 27 years, the Dallas Cowboys have only won 4 playoff games. In all these years, with all these coaches, and the hundreds of different players, I ask you a simple question. what is the one constant factor been? And that answer is none other than Jerry Jones. And now, after 3 decades of anguish, Jerry Jones brings in the offensive coordinator for the coach he just fired, Brian Schottenheimer, an OC that wasn't calling plays and wasn't in serious consideration for any other jobs. So, you may say at this point, sure, Jerry Jones is undoubtedly the problem with the Cowboys organization, but who really cares that the Cowboys have sucked for the last 30 years? Everyone else seems to get a good laugh of it, you know? And from an even broader perspective, who really cares about this silly game of football? So what? Jerry Jones is having a little bit of fun with his own organization. But this stuff matters to people. Fans are giving their time, their money, and emotion to these games their entire lives with the simple expectation that the team should reciprocate some fraction of that passion. So when the owner of the world's biggest, most popular team decides year after year to prioritize his own pockets, his own ego, and his own countless insecurities over the good of a fan base that has gotten nothing in return, I have a problem with that. Jerry, you weren't man enough to accept that Jimmy Johnson was the reason we won those Super Bowls. You weren't aware enough to recognize the need for a general manager. And unlike every other owner in sports, for God's sakes, you weren't even smart enough to orient the stadium on a north-south axis. Good heavens. Last night, I called my dad on the phone for 45 minutes to talk about Jerry Jones and what the Cowboys have been like over the last 3 decades. I tried to get a quote from him that had some fire or some emotion to sum up how horribly Jerry Jones has repaid the millions of loyal Cowboys fans that are out there. Instead, my dad, who's the reason why I came to love sports in the first place, had almost no emotion when he said, "Jerry Jones has taken the fun out of football for people in the Metroplex. Football is supposed to be a source of joy, especially in Dallas, a city where 20,000 people will go to a high school football game. But Jerry is completely and utterly incapable of looking inward to address the real problems with the Cowboys. It wasn't Mike McCarthy. It isn't Dak Prescott, Micah Parsons, or CeeDee Lamb. And I can guarantee you it won't be Brian Schottenheimer. It's you, Jerry Jones. And I hope that one day you pay for the years of agonizing mediocrity that you and you alone have inflicted on the great city of Dallas. I mean it from the bottom of my heart when I say eat a bag of dirt, you sad little old man." That's all.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Garrett. Wow. I really don't know how to follow that up. That is an all time against the grain moment right there. So just raw fan emotion from Mr. Garrett Lowe. Let's clap it up. Yeah. We are very crunched for time due to our passion for the NFL coaching carousel, so we are going to kick Rice men's basketball to next week. We hope they have some more exciting results for you. We'll be able to talk about that Memphis game on Sunday. We are going to rapid fire our predictions segment, so everyone get ready to fly through this like couple words. If you agree with the person next to you, just say so. We're starting off with pair of college men's basketball games. We've got North Carolina at Duke. The campuses are just 9 miles apart. It's one of the greatest rivalries in all of college sports. Let's start with Brandon. Who do you got?
I have Duke. I don't think it's going to be close.
I have Duke in a close one.
Give me the Blue Devils by a million.
Duke.
UNC. I'm just picking dogs.
I agree with Duke. I think they're the better team, and they are at home in Cameron Indoor. Next college basketball game, we're picking the Red Raiders at Houston right here in the great city on the Gulf that we live in. Brandon, who you got?
Got the Cougars.
I'll wait till March to pick against Houston.
Give me the Cougs.
I think this one's going to be close, but Houston gets it in.
Houston takes it. I got to take a favorite with my UNC pick.
I agree with Chloe. I think it will be closer than people think. I will give it to Houston. We're going to jump real quick. We're going to do our underdog pick before we wrap it up. Just a reminder, our dog of the week has to be at least plus 200 odds. We gain a point to our record if they are correct, but it does not affect losses. So it's kind of a risk-free choice in our predictions competition, risk-free chance in our predictions competition to take a shot in the dark. Brandon, tell us about your dog pick for this week.
I'm going to take Missouri over Mississippi State at plus 225.
I will go to the Premier League and take Nottingham Forest and Brighton to tie.
Lovely pick. Give me UConn over Marquette plus 270.
So not fair that Garrett gets to go first, because that is my dog. David?
I'm taking UNC over Duke, like I said earlier.
I am taking the Hawks of Maryland Eastern Shore over the Howard Bison there at plus 210. Going to be an absolute barn burner, that one. All right, our final game that we are picking, we talked enough about it. Now we're going to see who its take is really on the money. The Rockets are traveling to what some would call the greatest city in the world to take on the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden. Brandon, what's your pick?
It's hard to win when you have Jalen Brunson going against. So go to the Knicks.
Jalen Brunson's head is too big for Amen Thompson. Give me the Knicks.
Big purr in the Knicks.
Let's roll with the home team. Go Knicks.
Amen Thompson is going to have Jalen Brunson in a jail cell.
I am also going to take the Rockets I just have a feeling. I like the vibe of the young team. I'm a little bit of a hometown convert now that I've moved here. Let's ride with the Rockets.
Did that feeling lead you to 8-10?
That feeling has led me a lot of places, Max. Thank you for pointing out my spectacular record in predictions. That's all for today. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Amazon Music by searching KTRU Sports. Make sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and you can DM us if you have any questions. We would love to break down some of your thoughts on the air. Thank you so much for joining us early this Saturday morning, or whenever you happen to stream our episode throughout the next week. Enjoy the bizarre mix of rain and sunshine we have been getting on the Gulf Coast here in H-Town, and we will see you bright and early at 8 a.m. next week. So long, folks.